We do have a quorum. The Government Operations Elections Committee will come to order. We'll start out with the last bill on the agenda, House File 1993, Representative Barrett. I'll move that House File 1993 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to HHS Finance.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. House File 1993 extends the dates for the ending of four different advisory councils. There are four councils that end on June 30th, 2012, 4 months from now. So we're extending it by 2 years to 2014, or at the will of the Sunset Commission. There's some language in the bill that talks about Section 3D.21, which refers to the Sunset Commission and recommendations coming out of that commission here in the next year or two. The four advisory councils are the American Indian Advisory Council, the Citizens Advisory Council on Alcohol and Drug Dependency, the State Traumatic Injury Program, which relates to traumatic brain injury, and then the Indian Child Welfare Advisory Council. And I have Tom Reuter from the Department of Human Services that can answer any questions, specific questions about each of the councils and what they do at your pleasure, Madam Chair.
Questions from members? How, Representative Barrett, can you talk a little bit about how this council is different from the boards? Aren't there specific boards of like the Council on Black Minnesotans and the other councils of color? Is this the same as that, or is that something different?
Sure, I can give you an update, and then Mr. Reuter would be happy to answer specific details. But these four are particular to four different areas. The Drug and Alcohol Advisory Council talks specifically about drug and alcohol issues. They bring in members from the community who know specific issues about the community and what's happening related to drug and alcohol, for example. And so they come in, they meet quarterly usually, and they advise the department on that particular area of their expertise.
Hi.
Madam Chair and committee members, my name is Thomas Reuter, and I'm with the Minnesota Department of Human Services, Chemical and Mental Health Administration. The four advisory councils that we have in this bill, the two of them relate to advising the department on spending a federal grant that we receive for alcohol and drug abuse prevention and treatment services in the state of Minnesota. The Traumatic Brain Injury Advisory Council advises the Department of Human Services on spending and priorities and public policy around services and how they are designed and provided for in the state of Minnesota. And the American Indian Child Welfare Advisory Council provides recommendations to the department on policies and procedures related to Indian Child Welfare Services formed under the Minnesota Indian Family Preservation Act. These advisory councils are not the same as the boards that Madam Chair referred to. They are separate entities than those boards.
Okay. And this, so if we pass this, this will put this in line with the Sunset Commission schedule. Is that
yes, Madam Chair. Yeah, it refers to Section 3D.21, which talks specifically towards the Sunset Commission and what their statutory obligations are.
Makes sense. Okay, any other questions from members? Oh, Representative Hancock.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Barrett or Mr. Reuter, have talks, I represent the area of Red Lake Nation. And I'm just wondering, on any commission like this, have they had feedback as to the makeup of the advisory commissions? Is Chairman Jardine or the Tribal Council saying that this is something they would like to continue with that amount of representation?
Madam Chair and Representative, the Red Lake Nation is a part of the American Indian Advisory Council. And they are also on the American Indian Child Welfare Advisory Council. So they would wish as well that these advisory councils would continue. And the other thing that I would say is that we For the American Indian Advisory Council and the Citizens Advisory Council, we obtained a $23 million federal block grant from the Substance Abuse Prevention and Treatment Block Grant. And if these advisory councils were not continued, we would be putting those federal dollars at risk, meaning we would not meet the qualifications of the state plan requirement if we did not have these advisory councils in statute.
Representative Hancock.
Just one quick follow-up. Thank you, Madam Chair. I wasn't questioning their support. I was just questioning, you know, when the delegations from each of the tribes, for example, and two from St. Paul and two from Minneapolis, I just wanted to make sure that the various tribes, including Red Lake that I represent, was happy with the delegation amount and so on that was on there. And I'm assuming that that they would support it. It's not that. It's just by also assuming that you're extending a council, it's good to get the approval of the parent organizations that are putting people on that council, so to speak.
Mr. Reuter?
Madam Chair and Representative, I believe that the councils are satisfied with the membership and makeup of the councils. That hasn't been in question as we've put this bill together. Tying to the Sunset Commission is something that we have done an amendment on in the Health and Human Services Committee, so that we can be in line with the statute that governs when the Department of Human Services and those functions come up for review. But as far as the membership makeup of the advisory councils, I believe that they are that folks are pleased with that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to make sure that they had access and input into that.
Any other questions from members?
Madam Chair, if I could.
Representative Barrett.
Madam Chair, I'm wondering about the motion you made earlier. It was our expectation this would go to the general register. I believe you referred it to finance. Anna, is there a fiscal note or is there a fiscal reason? I was just curious about that.
Representative Barrett, the committee has requested to look at this for a number of provisions.
Very
so
good.
The committee administrator has asked to see it for the HHS.
Thank you.
Okay, I'll renew my motion then that House File 1993 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the HHS Finance Committee. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion does prevail. Next, we'll take up House File 1517.
Madam Chair.
Wow.
Madam Chair, I'll move the bill. Where's the need to go to from here?
I think the general register.
Consent calendar.
That'd be a way to kill it, but yeah. Madam Chair, I move the House File 1517 be passed and put to the general register.
So moved.
And I see there's an amendment. Do we need to put that on first for the author? Or?
Madam Chair, Representative Nelson, that's an author's amendment that would put it in the shape that I'd like to proceed with it.
So, Madam Chair, I'll also move the A1 amendment.
So moved. Any discussion to the A1 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A1 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion does prevail. To your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And first off, thank you, Chair Pepin, for hearing the bill and members for your consideration. I'll start with a confession. My confession is that I am not one of those folks that like state muffins or state mammals. I don't consider them to be terribly serious bills, and we've got a lot of serious business. So when I first had this bill brought to me by the two gentlemen that flanked me on my left and right, I was a little leery about it. And I didn't really share that with these guys, but I was kind of, you know, pipe band, an official pipe band, and I wasn't real sure about it until I learned what they do. They perform for free. at firefighter funerals and at military funerals. They help out at Beyond the Yellow Ribbon efforts, National Guard efforts. They do all this for free. They are not here seeking the official designation out of vanity or out of arrogance or out of a desire to make any more money. They are here because they think that that would make it a more meaningful experience for the families and organizations that they serve. And with that, I'm going to let you hear from these two gentlemen that can better explain it. Thank you.
Welcome to the committee. If you could just identify yourself for the record before you begin.
Yes, Madam. My name is Lynn Ista, and I am the pipe major and a director of music of the Minnesota State Fire Service Memorial Pipe Band.
The last name, Ista?
Ista, I-S-T-A.
Thank you. Proceed.
Okay. Now, the Minnesota State Fire Service Memorial Pipe Band is a nonprofit volunteer organization that was formed in 2002. And our primary mission and function is to support, number one, the fire service in performing for line of duty death funerals. And we also support dedications via the fire, new fire hall, fire truck. And also, we perform for memorial services, fundraisers, and open houses. Now, the next group that we support is the National Guard, and we are on call for any line of duty death when a soldier loses his life in the war on terrorism. And we also have performed at deployment ceremonies, and we perform at welcome home ceremonies, family picnics, and we have performed jointly with the 34th Infantry Division Red Bull Band. Now, we also support our military veterans by performing functions sponsored by the Beyond the Yellow Ribbon organization. And then we also play with community bands. And I have music that is written for band and bagpipes, which means the pipes and drums perform with band accompaniment. And we do this for the enjoyment of the public. And what is unique about the Minnesota State Fire Service Memorial Pipe Band in comparison with other pipe bands in the state is that we are a public service band, and we do not charge to perform for the fire service, the military, our veterans, or community bands. And we are very honored to do this and have received a great deal of positive feedback from the military and the fire service. The biggest impact that our band has is connected with the music that we play. Any musician knows that music comes from the heart and can make one feel happy or make one feel emotional and sad. So for any given performance, I make sure to choose the proper tunes. And for happy occasions, we play the upbeat music, which will make you want to tap your foot, get up and do something. Or for the funerals, we play the solemn tunes. And combined music of band and pipes has a very powerful effect on audiences, as very few people are exposed to this type of music because it's normally played by the military bands in the British Army and the Scottish bands and in the UK. So, and Minnesota is unique being that it is the only state left in the country that has an official state band, which we've performed with two times. And in regards to the public service support that we provide to the fire service, the National Guard, our veterans, and the community, we respectfully request your support in passing this bill that would allow us to have the honor and the privilege of being recognized as the official state pipe band for Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you. And again, if you could just identify yourself before beginning.
Yep. My name is Richard Cady, spelled C-A-D-Y. I'm the Minnesota State Fire Service Memorial Pipe Band Event Coordinator. This band provides many free services to fire rescue personnel and military personnel and departments and units because we appreciate the service that they have provided for the communities of Minnesota and the nation. Being a Persian Gulf veteran and having 24 years of combined active and reserve service, I'm particularly interested in what we can do for the military service members and veterans. Currently, we perform full honors funerals for the Minnesota National Guard line of duty casualties at the family's request. We also perform at unit deployments and welcome home ceremonies. We perform for unit family picnics and open houses, many of which are coordinated by Beyond the Yellow Ribbon organizations. We found a great ally with the Minnesota Beyond the Yellow Ribbon organizations. They assist us in connecting with military units and veterans groups. We are currently researching how we can provide support to various military reserve units in Minnesota. These include the Army Reserve, Air Force Reserve, Marine Corps, Navy, Coast Guard, and ROTC units. We have also connected with the United States Post Office Service and perform for their Veterans Recognition Days in the fall and their annual holiday season Shop, Ship, and Share Days, where they send care packages overseas to military personnel. All of these performances are done at no expense to anyone or their departments or units. We feel it is an honor and privilege to perform for them, to honor their service for Minnesota and the nation. Thank you.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just, I have a series of fairly quick questions here, and I might make a comment or two. First of all, I don't know, we have a state band, do we? I assume it's a polka band, but did you?
No. It's an official state band. When we performed with it, Fayan Tetzloff was the director, and they used to the rehearsal night was in the DOT building right over here, and it used to be funded, but their funding went by the state. And I was told the funding was dropped, and I think they survived by donations, selling CDs, but they're all a volunteer band also.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. As Representative Atkins mentioned, we do have a lot of state this and state that, and I've not necessarily been an opponent of it. I think I voted for the state apple once. Of course, that representative got beat. But no reflection on you, Representative Atkins. And I have actually sponsored a state song bill once, but I couldn't get a hearing on that. But I don't have I think the state mammal idea, we maybe should hear that. Let those first graders come in and talk about the black bear. But anyway, my questions. Are there other pipe bands? I mean, how many other are there?
I'm not sure how many pipe bands there are, but there are a number of pipe bands in there are several in the Twin Cities. I know there's one in Duluth, and
one in Rochester.
Right, yeah, Rochester.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The testifiers, what is your geographic territory? I mean, where do you travel the state?
Travel or? All over the state.
Okay, thank you, and Madam Chair, what do you charge? Do you have a fee to do this?
No, it's all free.
It's free.
And how many, Madam Chair, how many members do you have in the band, in the pipe band?
It's a small band, it's pipe band, so we have four or five pipers and a couple of drummers.
Representative Erdahl. Good. Representative Guam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I always enjoyed the pipe bands, and 2 years ago lining up at the Rochester Fest parade, and a storm was coming in, and just as it was about to start, they canceled it. I was near the pipe band, and I thought I heard someone say, it's just a bit of wind, and they marched on, and they went through, and I thought, there's a certain character to the members of the pipe bands, and after hearing what you do with your time, I think there's a higher character to this band, and I can see that it could be right and proper that you would be an official band. Thank you.
Are there any other questions? Well, Representative Atkins, I'm not a big fan of state designation, so I'm not sure where I'll be on this on the House floor, but we'll take a vote on it now and see how it goes. All those in favor? Oh.
Madam Chair, I renew my... First, I want to say, Madam Chair, I hope they can get Representative Atkins a kilt to wear when he gets on the floor. But with that, I renew my motion that House File 1517, as amended, be recommended to pass and move to the General Register.
So moved. And Representative Nelson, I'm not sure if Representative Atkins presenting in a kilt would make me more likely or less likely to vote for this. So maybe he can just come as per usual.
I'm hoping to pass the bill, Representative
Nelson. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. No. Motion does prevail.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, we've got... We're going to lay over House File 2368, and we're going to take up my bill, House File 2589, and I'm going to turn over the gavel to Representative Hancock.
Welcome, Representative Pepin. Would you care to move your bill?
Yes. Mr. Chair, I will move that House File 2589 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Environment and Natural Resource Committee.
And Representative Pepin, to your bill?
I also have an author's amendment. It's just more clarifying language that I'd like to offer to
we'll
get it in my shape.
I think we'll take that to put it in the form you would like.
I will move A1.
Okay, is there any discussion on the A1 amendment? All those in favor, say aye.
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 Those opposed? That's passed. To your bill, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 2589 requires watershed districts to gain the consent of the local unit of government prior to acquiring property or to specifically identify and designate the real property for acquisition in their adopted watershed plan. Watershed districts are governed by a non-elected board of managers appointed by a county board. Watershed districts are special taxing districts whose boundaries extend through and beyond any number of cities and towns. Watershed districts may currently acquire real and personal property to achieve their purpose. This includes property outside its district if necessary for a water supply system. While the general purpose of a watershed district is to use sound scientific principles to conserve the natural resources of the state, their specific purposes are focused on protecting and enhancing water quality, improving streams, controlling and alleviating soil erosion, and to regulate stream flow and or proposed changes in riparian areas. Watershed districts are limited and are able to focus on water quality, whereas local units of government, as you know, are not afforded the ability to focus solely on one issue, but must address and balance a number of conflicting concerns meeting the needs of current residents while still planning for the future. Local governments plan for the orderly development of their communities. Sanitary sewer and water pipes are sized based on the expected number of homes and/or commercial industrial square footage. Roads, bridges, and streets are constructed based on the anticipated average daily trips. Areas that are slated development are based on the required Met Council population projections, density requirements, and local zoning regulations. If these areas were to become conservation areas or areas with developmental limitations, municipalities would be limited to inefficient infrastructure, implementation planning, and ultimately higher costs. The requirement of local consent is not a new idea. Park districts must not acquire real estate by purchase or condemnation without the consent of the city in which the property is located. Municipalities with significantly high quality natural resources are highly desirable and often the target of park districts and watershed districts. Cities are amenable to working cooperatively with park districts and watershed organizations to facilitate the purchase of private or public property. but a continued prohibition of municipal consent regarding land use and zoning inhibit a city's ability to effectively and efficiently manage its resources. This bill promotes continuing a collaborative approach between watershed districts and local units of government. It also assists to ensure that priorities for the conservation of natural resources are shared between watersheds and cities and helps to align the most effective tools in both organizations. With that, I have a few witnesses that I would like to, from two different cities, that I would like to have an opportunity to testify.
Are there any questions from members at this point? Why don't we proceed with your first one you would like to call, Representative? Would you please identify yourself for the record, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Derek Ashley. I'm the Water Resource Manager for the City of Plymouth. Some of my responsibilities include implementing projects, programs, and practices to help meet both the city's goals and the goals of watershed districts, but also goals of other agencies like the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. I'm in favor of this bill because I believe land acquisition in the city can significantly impact municipal operations. Some of these impacts include the density requirements, parks and trail systems, utility services to serve future development, and so on. While the City of Plymouth has not had property purchased by a watershed district, this issue does come up time to time with the Three Rivers Park District, and we do appreciate the opportunity to work with them to reach our mutual goals. In general, from a water resource perspective, I'm not convinced that land acquisition programs necessarily are needed to meet water quality goals. Goals can be reached through capital improvements, regulation, educational programs, and other methods. We've been able to complete different projects in the City of Plymouth, such as stream restorations and ponding projects, without the need to purchase property. However, if a land acquisition program is to be implemented, it is extremely important that the property acquisition by watershed districts be cooperative and coordinated such that the goals of both the city and the watershed district can be met. If a property were to be purchased in Plymouth by a watershed district, there are a few things that I would at least be interested in understanding about the purchase. Number one, does the purchase affect any existing short or long-term water resource planning that the city is already involved in? Number two, what are the plans for the property after the purchase, and how does that affect long-term planning? And number three, and maybe most importantly, does the purchase affect the City of Plymouth's ability to meet water quality mandates from other agencies such as the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency through their impaired waters and total maximum daily load program? And then lastly, I'm just concerned that language describing a land acquisition program can indicate the intent of a watershed district to work cooperatively. I think that's certainly something watershed districts want to do. However, sometimes the specific steps that go into actually purchasing the property would leave cities out. So that would be, I think, my last concern. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ashley. Any questions from members? Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, you know what? I'll wait till both testifiers are done.
Very well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and ladies and gentlemen. My name is Jerry Hertas. I'm the mayor of the city of Greenfield in Hennepin County. I would echo much of what my colleague from Plymouth has said. In addition, I would like to point out that many of our communities, particularly the exurban communities like Greenfield, Independence, Medina, much of our annual revenue is based solely on property tax. We do not enjoy, as a metropolitan community, any local government aid. In the case of Greenfield, we receive about 96% of our revenue from the property tax levy. Of particular concern in Greenfield is we, too, have had quite a bit of interaction in a positive way with Three Rivers Park District, but we have lost about 11% of our total taxable base to Park Reserve. So therefore, we are particularly concerned that we would not be involved in any taking or acquisition, which would take more property off of the tax roll, much of which would have riparian qualities and would be some of our highest and most valuable property. So one of revenue is of concern. We all share a concern for having clean water and monitoring total maximum daily loads. And I reiterate what's already been heard. We would work as a municipality and a city to achieve a common goal, but it does affect your comprehensive planning and your land use and particularly a revenue stream. And with that, I would close my comments.
Thank you, Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Representative Simon was first.
Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, for Mayor Hertas, thanks for coming here today. I thought I heard you say that you had some positive interaction with the Park District, with Three Rivers, but then you talked about some of your possible concerns over Park District. As I understand it, this bill just deals with watershed districts. And I'm far from an expert on the subject matter, but would this bill really affect your concerns in the sense that you're talking about the Park District?
Well, the differentiation is that the Park Districts are required to work with the city.
Okay.
And so we have had part of that land as part of our comprehensive plan guided for Park, and it's all cohesive as part of our long-range planning. But in the case of the current situation, we have unelected officials who are appointed to watershed districts with taxing authority, and this is a means of checks and balance to make sure that we're all on the same page and that we support these causes and efforts that they would be undertaking.
Simon.
Thank you. And now for Mr. Ashe, I represent Hopkins, and as you know, there's sort of a Hopkins angle to this. My understanding was that, recently, as you know, Watershed District purchased a parcel of the cold storage site in Hopkins along the Minnehaha Creek, and the city welcomed it. I've talked with the city folks. They think it's great. They're going to be cleaning up a portion, really the most polluted portion, I'm told, of the Minnehaha Creek, and I know that when that came out, at least someone forwarded me a link to the news clip when that came out for reasons I'm not quite sure about. The news story showed that people in Plymouth were objecting to, the mayor was on there and she expressed a certain frustration. For some reason, people in Plymouth were upset that there was a purchase made in Hopkins. So I guess my first question is this about that transaction?
Mr. Ossie?
Mr. Chair, no, this is not about the purchase in Hopkins at all. This is about the ability of cities and watershed districts to work together to reach the mutual goals. I would understand that the purchase in Hopkins would do that then for the city of Hopkins and for the watershed district. And we would like to be assured the opportunity to work with the watershed district as well should they intend to purchase property in the city of Plymouth.
Representative Simon?
Mr. Ashe, you laid out some criteria, or at least some factors that you would consider when it came to a watershed district coming in with taxing authority and buying a parcel of land. You mentioned density. You mentioned other water quality efforts that you were involved with. But how would that differ from any other transaction with a willing buyer and a willing seller? Let's say there were a parcel of land that impacted sort of your water program in the city of Plymouth, and instead of the watershed district coming in and buying it, 3M came in and bought it, or a Best Buy, or a bank, or something like that. Since my understanding is we don't have this requirement in for any of those buyers where there's a willing seller, what distinguishes a purchase made by Watershed District?
Mr. Rossi?
Mr. Chair, I think the difference to me would be the intent of the Watershed District would be to manage that property in a way to protect the natural resources, which is something that's positive. But the intent to manage that property for the natural resources may interfere with the city trying to reach water resources goals as well. So the coordination of one project on a parcel versus a different project, if the Watershed District had one project, is that the right project for the city of Plymouth and all the different goals and resources that we're trying to utilize to meet? So when when private property purchases goes on, that my experience hasn't been that those new owners come in and do a stream restoration or things like that. I suppose that could happen, certainly. But the intent of the watershed districts is typically to come in and do an improvement, which we certainly welcome that. We want to be assured that that improvement is in line with what we're trying to do to meet resource goals as well.
Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just say, and if the concern is, and you haven't enunciated that, and I'm not putting words in your mouth, but if a concern behind this bill is that a watershed district is going to come in and convert a parcel to a use that affects the tax rolls, I can say with respect to the Hopkins project in particular, and I know you take you at your word that that's not what this is about, that the Watershed Creek, I think, has made a really impressive case, that the Watershed District has made an impressive case that they're going to come in. They have already. They have bought the cold storage site. They're going to restore that portion of the creek, which is really the dirtiest stretch, at least for a good portion of the creek, and then they're going to turn it back over once they've restored it. They're going to make sure that private interests can come back and repurchase the land. So their intention, at least, is not to hold on to it forever. It's to hold on to it until they can restore it and then have private buyers come in and developers come in and develop the land. I just want to make that clear in case anyone had any doubt. They're not intending to kind of expand some sort of landowning empire. They just want to restore it and get out.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And some of my questions were asked by Representative Simon, but I guess the one I have is, why only Hennepin County? I mean, why aren't we doing this? If this is a good idea, why are we not only doing this for Hennepin County and not for Cass or Lyons or Olmsted County? Why are we just doing this for Hennepin County?
Representative Pepin.
Representative Nelson, well, because I represent part of Hennepin County, and it was brought to me by people in Hennepin County, but that doesn't mean we couldn't expand it. I just haven't had that request from other members, and I would be open to doing so if that were, if that was what the city, the League of Cities or someone else would want to do. I'd be open to that, but I'm trying to just limit it to the area that I know it affects.
And Mr. Chair?
Representative Nelson.
I guess the other question I have is: there somebody here from the counties, the league, the county association, or from Hennepin County that's going to speak about this and give us some insight as to what they feel about this bill? Because I guess I'm in the dark about that.
I believe there are a couple other testifiers, not from that area. I understand, Representative Wakeberg.
Thank you, Mr. Is it? Eshi, Ashi? I've heard lots of different versions this morning.
Ashi.
Yeah. Okay. But Mr. Ashi, can you explain more about how watershed districts' purchase of property and, for example, stream restoration would interfere with your water resource goals? I'm having trouble envisioning how that would be an interference with what you're trying to accomplish.
Mr. Ashi.
Mr. Chair, the concern really would stem from the ability of the watershed district to apply conservation easements over an area, and what that would mean for the city. It's unclear what a conservation easement would limit or allow or what kind of things we could do with something like that. So I think the opportunity to sit down with the watershed district before these properties are purchased to understand what the project is or the goal is of whatever the purchase is for, and how that affects the city is essential.
Representative Wicker.
Well, thank you, Mr. Ashley. I guess that essentially, my interpretation of your answer is you don't have a particular concern right now, but you just want to basically be consulted and you want to be part of the thought process about how this is put together, because there could be something that is in conflict or it might not be your highest priority for dealing with water quality issues or something like that.
Mr. Ashley?
Mr. Chair, I could just, a hypothetical example might be if a property was purchased and a conservation easement was applied over a portion of that land, and the city had a plan for, say, a regional pond in that area to treat surface water runoffs, would that particular purchase and conservation easement, would that affect then the city's ability to treat the surface water to the degree that would help us meet goals of a total maximum daily load through the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency or some other agency requirement? So that would be just a hypothetical.
And
Representative Wakeberg.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Asher, but I would assume that you'd have to have these things as part of your comprehensive plan in your... have to be part of your comprehensive plan and part of your zoning ordinance, and I would assume the watershed district would be buying the property subject to those things.
Mr. Ashley?
That's true. For example, the Minnehaha Creek Watershed District outlines through their land acquisition program the properties with which that they would consider purchasing, and then outlines some goals and some strategies and some requirements for what that might be in order to do that. And we do as well. And the watershed plan and the city plans are coordinated to some degree. In between approval of a watershed plan, which goes on for 10 years, and a city's comprehensive plan, different requirements come out. For example, I'll go back to total maximum daily load plans. Once approved by the Environmental Protection Agency, cities have a limited amount of time, 18 months, to start implementing projects. And there isn't always time to go back and coordinate those plans in order to make sure everybody's on the same track so that we can all reach our goals. And I think just working these things out before the purchase would be helpful to a city. We would certainly welcome these improvements. I don't mean to say, you know, that or leave an impression that we don't welcome, you know, a water resource improvement in the city of Plymouth. That's not the case. But we would welcome the opportunity to coordinate these with a watershed district so that we can make sure that our mutual goals are all being met.
And Representative Winkler, Chair, Mayor Hertaus, I would assume, I don't know how this works, but if the watershed district purchases the land, it comes off the tax rolls automatically. Is that, or is it just by nature the fact that it's owned by another governmental unit that they don't pay property taxes on it?
Mr. Hertaus?
Thank you. There's a couple of scenarios that could play out in that circumstance, and one that's been stated in the case of the Hopkins St. Louis Park thing, the intention there was to put it back onto the tax rolls. In the case that colleague Ashi has mentioned, the problematic is when a watershed has an ambitious program without consulting a community, they could potentially acquire a piece of property and put restrictive covenants or easements on the property, which would limit its future use. So by having this mechanism or having this tool in the front end, would require that everybody and all of the stakeholders are at the table and able to agree on things in making things move forward. So I think that's the most critical part or critical component of this. Again, I don't think that any community would stand in the way or impede the efforts to improve our water quality. It's a matter of how we get it done and that it's going to be cohesive with all of the entire planning that the community shares and the visions it has for its community as well.
Thank you. Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm trying to, I'm sorry I missed the introductions here when I had to run out for a moment, but try to come up to speed on this. I heard the description, and this for either the mayor or for Mr. Ashe, the park districts and watershed districts and how they differ in not only their fitting into your comprehensive plans, but how they differ in their cooperative and proactive, I guess, relationships with the people and the entities in their districts. That intrigues me a bit. So if you can just help the committee understand park districts, once again, where their funding stream comes from, how they acquire property, and whether or not that property tax stays on the tax rolls or not. And then I have a couple more questions, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. With regards to park property, no, it doesn't stay on the tax rolls. There is a one-time payment that is made upon acquisition, and basically a payment in lieu of future taxes, and it's usually in the increment of about 2 or 3 years of tax payments, and then it's forever off the tax roll.
Mm-hmm.
The DNR, on the other hand, in its acquisitions, pays property taxes to the local jurisdictions, communities, counties, whoever they're responsible to. When the DNR goes out and acquires property, it still reimburses property taxes. In the case of Three Rivers Park District and in the case of Hennepin County, it's exempted from that law, so that revenue is lost forever.
I see.
Representative Beard.
Mr. Chair, then when it comes to the watershed districts, then I know they have taxing authority. Where do they get their money to acquire property, and have you had the experience of them working with you? It sounds like not. And what happens to their property? Does that also come off the tax rolls then, Mr. Mayor?
In the case of watersheds, they don't know jurisdictional boundaries because it follows the bowl or the basin that the water it originates from. So oftentimes, water districts, watersheds, their revenue is applied as a matter of levy on the property base or the tax capacity. And, of course, all stakeholders within an area are not equal. business properties, business taxes are more severely affected by virtue of their value and their tax rate. So oftentimes you have very large watershed districts with a huge amount of revenue stream. And problematic out in some of the smaller watersheds is the state is mandating water quality standards, and this is going to become a very onerous burden on smaller communities because these watersheds are not property rich in terms of the improvements and the tax capacity that they have. So in the case of Greenfield Independence, Lake Sarah right now is an impaired water, and there's proposals that are going to cost millions of dollars to clean up Lake Sarah, but yet it's a regional resource, a regional asset, but, you know, given a taxing authority would fall squarely on the shoulders of Greenfield residents and Independent City residents if those types of programs were implemented.
Representative Beard, probing just a little further on how they finance their operations and their acquisitions, I'm thinking specifically of one that I just hear about from time to time. That's Minnehaha Creek Watershed District. Very long, runs through all kinds of property, and I know they've got some pretty ambitious plans. When they do something like buy the building in Hopkins to straighten out the creek, clean up that section of creek bank and so on, do they levy that tax all the way to Greenfield or through Plymouth to pay for that, or can they zone their levy so that an area around, say, Hopkins would pay more than somebody in western Hennepin County? Do you follow the question?
Yes,
what
I do.
I'm trying to get at?
Thank you. It is within the watershed, within the district, where the water drains to. So the Greenfield area is not affected by the Minnehaha watershed. Plymouth, I believe, is. Maybe Mr. Ashe would like to comment.
Maybe Mr. Ashe, Mr. Chairman, could better answer the question this specifically.
Mr. Chair, I believe the watershed district would have the option to set up a special taxing district if they so choose. I don't know that that would have been the case for this particular project. But the Minnehaha Creek Watershed District, as I understand it, includes $2 million per year in their capital improvement program to fund their land acquisition program. Those taxes are, my understanding, is spread throughout the entire watershed.
Representative Beard?
Mr. Chair, thank you. And I know a little about this because I know in the legislature, Representative Hansen and I tend to watch out for the Lower Minnesota River Watershed District, which runs from his district through mine and so on. And we're always listening to their board play the balancing act on what the port should be responsible for versus the taxpayers, say, in Carver or Chaska or Jackson Township. And I understand that dynamic a little bit and their taxing authority, and which is one of the reasons they come here from time to time for bonding, statewide bonding, because the ports really aren't the responsibility of the city of Chaska, the responsibility of the entire southwestern portion of the state. But in this case, I'm trying to track how the money flows and the responsibility and why the city of Plymouth then would express concern, and if that's not relevant to the bill, but I think it is somehow, why they would even express some concern about a purchase in Hopkins, unless that was going to be capital that was extracted from those taxpayers to buy that. That's what I'm, and I wonder how that's connected to this. If you could care to speak to it, fine. If I'm wading into something that's unnecessary, just say so, and we'll visit another day.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, the Hopkins purchase isn't anything that brought me here today. And unfortunately, I can't speak for our city council.
All right,
and what their thoughts.
Well,
Representative Beard,
I'm trying to get in thinking about the way I interact with Lower Min and how that might fit into this. Do they pay taxes in lieu of? They make payments in lieu of if they take property off the tax rolls, or could they do something in a watershed district that would impact the ability for future revenue growth to your city, your school district, or your county? And is that the necessity of having this bill because we don't have payments built into this?
Mr. Ashe.
Mr. Chair, I think that goes back to what the watershed district would be doing with the property once it's purchased. If the intent is to place conservation easements over a portion of that property, and that does in effect eliminate property from being on a tax roll, and that doesn't help the city meet water resource goals, then that maybe isn't the best for the city. So if that's if that's the case, that's what we would want to work out, I think, beforehand.
Well, Mr. Chair, just a comment. Thank you, because I think I just saw a little ray of light there on why I would want to support this measure then. Because conservation easements, members, yeah, the district doesn't actually have to buy the property or take the property. They can just put an easement on, which restricts the use of that property going forward, which then restricts the ability for that property to pay taxes in some capacity going forward into the future. Then the measure that's being asked for in this bill, as I understand it, is that watershed districts in Hennepin County, in this case, and it might be a good idea for the whole state, they actually have to sit down and have a conversation and get a resolution of support then from these entities that are going to be affected going down the road. That just strikes me as good government. So I thank you. That helps me understand a little bit.
Representative Erdl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you know, as I've been listening to the conversation and talking with folks, I'm going to give a little bit different tack than Representative Beard just expressed. And that is this concern about, you know, doing this statewide or even in Hennepin County. The jurisdictional boundaries of some of our towns and cities, especially in rural Minnesota, are quite large. You go up to Baxter, I mean, many miles away from Baxter, you see the city limit sign. The same with St. Augusta and a lot of places across the state. So the concern that I come up with then is, you know, how does this affect the need for agriculture land and agriculture drainage when you're not dealing with a city specifically, you're dealing with much of the territory around the city that could be miles from the actual city limits. So a concern I have, if you care to touch on that, that'd be fine, but I needed to make that comment.
Okay, I think we do have some other people that wish to testify, so maybe we should take some testimony, and then if there are further questions from the members, we can do that. I believe there's a Mr. Evenson and a Mr. Joel Carlson. If you would, please state your name for the record and give your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Joel Carlson, and I own a legal research and government affairs business here in St. Paul, and I've long represented the Minnehaha Creek Watershed District since 1994, and it's a great day in Minnesota. The Moorhead Spuds won their opening game last night. Benilde St. Margaret took out Edina, and so it's a great day in Minnesota for the high school hockey tournament, and couldn't be happier to be here. We appreciate the opportunity to come here and promote the watershed approach to water management, and we think this is an important topic, and we appreciate Representative Pepin bringing this concern to the legislature. You know, Minnesota has been a leader in the watershed approach. We first created watershed districts in the 1960s, and the legislature did so because water is controversial. You either have too much or you have too little, and it doesn't flow over political boundaries. That's why we have watershed districts. And watershed districts in Minnesota have done an excellent job of coordinating with counties and cities to provide for flood control, water quality, surface water management, and they've done so without regard to political boundaries. And, you know, prior to establishing watershed districts, planning and development in Minnesota often took place without regard to downstream impacts. And that was a real problem. You could have a development in your city without planning for the flooding that it may bring downstream to another community. And that's what watersheds really, you know, try and accomplish. And our concerns with the legislation, it's not that a watershed district can't buy property, because what the concern is, watershed district buying property without local approval, to our knowledge, has never happened. That simply has never happened. Our concern is that this legislation could preclude a watershed district from meeting its statutory obligations for flood control over the objections of a single municipality along the floodway where you have many of your other partners that want a project to go through, and that is a problem for us in meeting what the legislature has imposed on watershed districts. We think that is just has the potential to create problems where it is inconsistent with your plan, and these plans are developed over a long period of time, and things come up during the period of a plan where it might not be in your approved plan. I understand the restriction in the bill as it relates to things that are approved in your local plan, but you really can have a situation where a municipality, for whatever reason, can frustrate the legislature's intent of having watershed districts plan for this flood control and surface water management. That is our concern. I have a couple of points about the bill, and then I'm going to have Eric Evenson, who's the district administrator for Minnehaha Creek, talk about their process, their planning, their community involvement, the public hearings that they hold, on all of their rules, permits, land acquisitions, so that you know that this is not done in a vacuum. It's not a group of appointed managers saying, gee, we're going to buy this parcel of property. It is always a public process. Everything is done in the open, and I want Eric to go through that with you. But on the bill, Mr. Chairman and members, several of these you've already hit on. We do question why this is related only to Hennepin County. I represent a watershed district in the Red River Valley, and this would be extremely problematic for a diversion project or a flood control project in the Red River Valley. And it's no more, it's not any better for them than it would be in Hennepin County. So expanding it statewide doesn't alleviate our concern. I think it adds problems to the bill, but it is a problem being focused only on Hennepin County. You mentioned the issue of easements, and easements do not take property off of the tax roll. It is often done to provide for a water quality enhancement, whether it's a buffer around a particular stream bank, and those are enhancements. Those do not reduce or eliminate the property tax value of that property. Property taxes in Minnesota are based on the estimated market value, which is its highest and best use, and many times a conservation easement will enhance the value of property because of its development restrictions. And lastly, as to the park issue, you need to know, and I believe you do, but you need to know that watershed districts and parks have completely different missions. You know, planning for the outdoor recreation for your local community and citizens is a great thing and a needed things for communities, but planning for flood control and the damage that can be caused through flooding are completely different. And so the legislature has not required a local approval component, even though it's always taken place. They've not required it because you have a larger picture here that can affect many property owners across political boundaries. And that's why watershed districts have not had that requirement as is called for in this bill. So, Mr. Chair, we appreciate you taking the time to hear from us as it goes to environment. We're happy to work with the author to try and address concerns. But this one does give us some collective heart failure because it could frustrate our ability to do our job. So I appreciate the time, and I'm going to have Mr. Evenson follow on how Minnehaha Creek does its business.
Mr. Evenson, please state your name for the record. And
Mr. Chair, legislators, my name is Eric Evenson. I am the administrator of the Minnehaha Creek Watershed District. I also thank you for allowing me to come here and talk with you all today. Couple of things, I think, just to start out with. Watershed districts have a very robust and a very transparent process as we're preparing our water management plans. Watershed districts, all the work that we do are done in accordance with a watershed management plan. I think Mr. Ashe talked a little bit about that when he was presenting. The plan is reviewed by our cities and is typically done so that it's done in concert with local comprehensive plans. Our plan does include quite a number of projects, and it identifies sub-watersheds where the projects are in. We typically work with willing landowners when we're implementing our projects. The plan also contains the areas of identified for our land conservation programs. And again, as Mr. Ashe says, these things are reviewed by the cities. The cities then use the plan as a basis as they prepare their plan. So we avoid any of these conflicts where stormwater facilities might be sited and so forth. So there's a pretty robust process. Then as we implement the plan, we go through required public hearings would identify then the costs and the details of these things, and the cities are involved in the notifications and the in the public hearing process. We're also subject to all city zoning requirements on anything that we do. One point here, I think it might be somewhat subtle, but I think it's important to point out, we really only have four watershed districts in Hennepin County. We have the Riley Purgatory Watershed District, the Lower Minnesota River Watershed District, the Nine Mile Creek Watershed District, and the Minnehaha Creek Watershed District. All others are joint powers watershed management organizations. Greenfield, for example, is in a joint power watershed management organization and would not be subject to these requirements. Most of Plymouth is really not in a watershed district. Only the southernmost part of the city of Plymouth is in a watershed district. So by and far, the majority of the city would not be affected by what the legislation is presenting here. In fact, only a fraction of the county would be. I've been with the watershed district now for well over 14 years, and you're right. I don't know of any problems that we've had. We typically work very closely with our communities in not only our conservation programs, but our projects as well. We've got several projects going on in the city of Plymouth right now. Probably over the last 10 years, we're in the area of close to spending about $3 million with the city on water quality improvements, working with them to help improve water quality in Gleason Lake and Mooney Lake are the two primary water bodies in the city, as well as working with them to implement programs, restore wetlands, and put in stormwater ponds that treat water draining into Lake Minnetonka, which is outside of the city of Plymouth's jurisdiction there. I agree with Joel's comments. Often our projects involve multiple communities. I'm thinking of one project in particular, a project in Long Lake. The city of Long Lake wanted us to work with them to help clean up the water in the lake. We had to do siting of treatment upstream from that in the cities of Medina and Orno. Again, if there were issues, we could see projects like this not being implemented. We also manage several hundred miles of agricultural drainage ditches that were installed. Some of them are still being used for agricultural drainage, but we were required to manage county ditches and judicial ditches in our district. Part of the management of these do require easements that we would need to acquire. Many of our projects, we're running about 17 capital projects right now, all of which require some sort of easements, whether it be access easements, drainage easements, conservation easements, what have you, in order for us to implement the project. So moving forward on this is going to create considerable costs and delays in implementing a number of these things as we move forward on it. I'd like to ask actually Ray Bowen from the Minnesota Association of Townships, or Minnesota Association of Watershed Districts, rather, is here also, and he's raised some concerns about drainage issues, and maybe we can ask Ray to join us up here.
Mr. Bowen, please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Ray Bowen. I'm here today representing the Minnesota Association of Watershed Districts. And while Joel said the sun is shining, it is indeed a sad day in Minnesota because they beat the Eagan Wildcats. His spuds. It's a pleasure to be here today to talk about this information. I represent, as you know, all the watershed districts throughout the state. And one of the issues in thinking about this and then talking about, and I wasn't planning on speaking actually, and talking about statewide impacts, we have a lot of agriculture in the state of Minnesota. In fact, there are 72 square miles of ag land in Hennepin County. I remember just not too long ago, I was talking to one of the county commissioners in Hamilton County, and he said people would be, really be surprised to understand all the ag land that's in Minnesota. And they obviously have, or in Hamilton County, they obviously have drainage ditches in that property. And several years ago, when Three Rivers Park District was up here and wanted to take over the water management in their whole area and kind of knock out the watershed districts, one of the things that we really talked about was those drainage ditches and what impact that would have. When you do drainage, most, just about all the watershed districts have some drainage authority. And as I read this law, the way I understand it would be, we would be somewhat limited. For example, if you wanted to create a new drainage ditch, although you don't create too many at this point, it's more improvements and repairs. But even then, sometimes when you do repairs or when you do improvements, you have to purchase some land. And does this preclude us from doing that? I guess I would just be very cautious. I haven't had a chance to talk. We have a drainage work group in the state, and we basically represent all the stakeholders that are involved in agricultural drainage, and we talk about these kinds of issues. I'm almost positive, would have some kind of impact. If, for example, one of the things that we're really promoting in agricultural drainage is conservation drainage. And conservation drainage means a number of things, but it mostly means you use more land, whether it's to store drainage or other drainage practices or widen the ditch, have a double ditch, they call it, and stuff. So that's all going to take land, and we're going to have to buy that land from the landowner. And if it's in the city limits, do we have to go to the city and get approval on every parcel of land going through an agricultural drainage area? So I think there's maybe some unintended consequences with this bill that, I mean, I would certainly like to take some time to talk to some of the farm groups that represent the farmers in Minnesota. Joel talked about, of course, the flooding situation and how that's all affected. I do know, like, statewide, there was a question about in lieu of taxes. In the Red River Valley, where they have these fairly large impoundments, they can be 3 square miles, they do pay, the watershed districts do pay in lieu of taxes on those. So I think it depends upon the size of the project. Those projects are very, very large. They're $25, $30 million projects, and much larger than I think most of the things we see here. I'd just like to clarify that I think the gentleman from Greenfield.
If I could, we have about eight to 10 minutes left that I'd like to wrap up this.
Okay, I just have
this hearing. So, and I believe Representative Beard has a question.
Okay.
To this.
Representative from Greenfield. I don't think Greenfield is in a watershed district. I believe it's in a WMO, a water management organization. Mm-hmm. And a water management organization is comprised of joint powers of the cities in that area. So if he's having a problem now or in the future, that, I mean, he would need to talk to his own city plus the other cities that he's in joint powers with to deal with that issue. So it has, I mean, if there's a problem in his area, a watershed district is not existing in his area right now. So I don't, I mean, I don't understand that. But anyway, there were a couple of other things. You know, watershed districts do not work in a vacuum. You know, we do our planning. Everybody's involved in that planning. If, in fact, the watershed district wants to make a change in their comprehensive plan, they have to, again, circle around and have a public hearing and meet with all those people again and talk to them about that change. So it's not done in a vacuum. And I think, you know, Eric discussed that a bit. And that this applies to every watershed district, whether it's in Hennepin County or in Ramsey County or in Cass County or whatever. Doesn't make any difference. That's the way, those are laws, and we have to follow those laws. And Director Jasky from the Board of Water and Soil Resources is here and probably could articulate that much better than I can. So with that, I would be
Representative Beard,
ready and willing to answer any questions.
A question to this point?
Yeah, I've got two quick questions that I hope can be answered succinctly, either for Mr. Bowen or probably for Mr. Evenson. The bill requires this to apply only to the acquisition of real property. Now, to layman, I think that means rocks and dirt with a border that's described somewhere. But if that also means conservation easements, would you correct me if I'm wrong? the real property include conservation easements or just dirt and rock, dirt and rocks?
Mr. Evenson.
My understanding is it includes easements as well as fee title. So a real property would include any easement, drainage easements, conservation easements, what have you, mm-hmm. as well as any dirt and rock.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That helps expand then what the bill actually means to me, and it's good to know that. The second question, the way I understand the bill to be written, it would require a resolution from a town that is going to have an acquisition made in it, whether it's an easement or actual parcel, unless the watershed district has a plan approved by the by Bowser. In other words, do watershed districts operate independently of Bowser on things like this, or do they actually have plans that Bowser has to sign off on? And as I understand it, if that's the case, then the approval of a jurisdiction would not apply if this bill were to become law as it's written. Do you work with Bowser on these? Do you have to have your plans approved there?
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes. The Board of Water and Soil Resources approves our plan. They approve any plan amendments that also involve the plan. So absolutely. The lost the train of thought here. I'm sorry.
Well, maybe I can just
Representative
help. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It appears then that the way the bill is written, it is if Bowser is approving your plans, then the need for any other approval of any other jurisdiction that's affected by the plans would be null and void, I think.
Mr. Chair, Representative, my understanding as the bill is written is that the plans themselves indicate general sub-watersheds or project areas. They don't identify these specific properties. It would be very, very expensive if we started indicating the specific properties we want to acquire, because all of a sudden those would be the most valuable properties in the watershed district. So they identify the areas in which we're going to be doing projects. And I believe that's what the intent of this was. They wanted to have the specific properties identified.
Yes.
And that does not happen. That would not be possible, actually, either, because most of the work that we do is done through a process of feasibility studies where we identify where the most suitable property within a sub-watershed would be to work with. And then we work with willing sellers in order to find properties that we would want to buy.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Beard.
Yeah, that's getting a little beyond the scope of this committee, but thank you for shedding a little more light on that. I'm sure if this comes up in the Environment Committee, we'll be drilling down quite a bit deeper on that. Thank you for helping me understand that.
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Evenson, I just want to make sure I have a clear answer to this. In the example of the Hopkins property, if you're purchasing a property, are you making payments in lieu of taxation to the local jurisdiction?
On that property, as long as any properties that we are as long as there are any properties that we are managing are generating any income, and in that particular case, there's an operating business on that, we're paying property taxes like anybody else would. Until that property is torn down and is basically vacant, we pay taxes on that as long as it's operating and driving any kind of income, we're paying property taxes on that. The intent on that particular property, as you know, is that it's going to be redeveloped. We're going to trim off the part of the land that we need, implement the stormwater management infrastructure that needs to be put in there to treat the whole community, or a large part of the community, and then the rest of the property is sold back to private development.
Representative Winker?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Evenson, so hypothetical situation. You bought the Hopkins property. The business was torn down, and the watershed district held on to it. Would that be a loss of property tax revenue to the city? Would that be a loss of property tax revenue to the city?
I'm not really clear, honestly. I know Mr. Bowen had indicated that there are provisions under law in which we'd be paying tax in lieu of. It's not been an issue for the watershed district, so I don't know. I don't know how to answer that question.
Representative Winker.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Evenson, sounds like what you're saying is you don't really know because you've never dealt with it because you've never done it.
That's absolutely correct.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. During this, there have been some comments that have bothered me. Mr. Evenson mentioned delays if they had to actually get approval of the city in which they're doing the work, and I have issues with unelected appointed boards that don't at least talk with the elected officials of the jurisdiction they're planning to do something in, and then the implication that Mr. Carlson had that easements don't impact and actually improve the value. I would think logic would dictate that if you are decreasing the possible use and flexibility, that it'd be hard for me to understand that increasing the value of a property on the tax rolls. But I have never been a huge fan of non-elected bodies acquiring property and being on the committee that this would be heard in next. I frequently hear groups, DNR, etc., come forward with asking authorization to be able to acquire real property. So I think this is a nice exploration and maybe adding better improvements to this process, even though we maybe haven't had an issue before. I think this is a good idea.
With that, Representative Pepin, would you care to address?
I think Mr. Johnson from the League of Cities wanted to address us. He seems to have left the room, but I'm sorry. I didn't know where you come from. I just looked through. He's very sneaky.
Mr. Johnson, again, we have a couple of minutes here. Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Craig Johnson with the League of Minnesota Cities. Can make very brief comments here just to say that we have just looked at this bill, haven't had time to go through it as, you know, big formal position, but generally speaking, we are supportive of the concept of local elected officials at the city level having the ability to make a comment and make a decision based on potential use of land in an easement manner or a real property manner within their jurisdictions by another local entity. And in particular, in this case, cities do not get PILT payment from the state or from other entities in the same manner towns and counties do. We have one city in the state that gets a little bit of PILT, and that's because when the city of Columbus incorporated from a township into a city a few years ago, that was part of the special legislation that allowed it, was that they got to continue getting the PILT that they get from the Carlos Avery site that's within their jurisdiction. Other than that, that's my brief comments, Mr. Chair and members, is that we are generally supportive of local elected bodies having some say in these projects as they move forward. I would add, as you've heard from others, it's a very rare circumstance where a watershed district and the city within it would be at odds at this level. They normally work very, very well together, communicate very well together, and they do cooperate on the watershed district plan for the area. But there are instances where they may not be in sync, and we would support having local jurisdiction to make decisions in that case.
I believe, Mayor, you would like to make another comment.
Yes, thank you. Just a closing comment. What you've heard today here is an example of why I came here to testify before you. You have many different jurisdictions with different sets of rules. I've inquired amongst the county commissioners a little bit of history about this, and only to find out that many years ago it was county commissioners who were responsible for making these water management decisions. Elections were being lost over water management issues. There's an old saying that goes back in our history that whiskey's for drinking and water's for fighting. And so we've created these different entities, whether they're water management organizations or water districts. In the case of Greenfield, it is stated correctly, we are currently under a member of a water management organization, but that gives us the very type of involvement because we have to be involved because we're under WMO. As is with the Three Rivers Park District, we also had to be consulted. The caveat to all of this is that some of the water management organizations, which have little or no ability to get funding because of tax-poor communities, are under the threat from state mandates to be absolved and become part of the watershed district if they can't get things done. And the real challenge here is to really look in a more comprehensive way with state mandates that I think that a lot of the watershed districts and the water management organizations should be consolidated into fewer groups, spread over larger areas with larger tax bases to spread the benefit in really cleaning up our water resources. You have to pool all that money to get the job done. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. To us, Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to get my mind around this too, but Mr. Mayor, the testimony we heard, and you just admitted to it, that you're not in a watershed district, so this legislation would have no effect on your ability one way or the other to do this because you're in a water management organization instead. So I guess some of the things you've said, this bill would have no effect on what happens in Greenfield.
Well, that's not correct in the sense that we are looking at the possibility that a WMO could be absolved for lack of funding because of our inability to fund it. And then we would be subjected to the rules of a water district. And that is a real concern to communities who don't have the ability to raise money to fund these ambitious projects that are unfunded mandates from the state of Minnesota in the WMO scheme of operation.
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess at the current time that they're not affected by this. I mean, if that happens in the future, that's something. But right now, they're not affected by how this legislation would go forward. But that's just my comment. So,
Representative Pepper, would you care to?
Well, thanks. I think we've had a really good discussion. I'm glad to hear some of the concerns and some of the issues and learn myself more about this issue. You know, what this is really about to me is accountability and collaboration and coordination. And I'd be happy to work with Mr. Carlson and learn more about those concerns. As you know, we do have another step, and when we can look at some of those things. And so with that, I hope I can get your support, and I'll work on it as I move to the next committee.
I believe that can be done, and would you care then to renew your motion? Or do I do it?
Yes, I will renew my motion that House File number 2589 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Environment Committee.
Okay, with that, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposes nay?
No.
It is passed, and we'll go to Environment and Energy. With that, we are adjourned.